Hey, welcome to Chef Journeys. Man, oh man, what a great day. Staring at my computer screen again, I got 214 downloads. Once again, it's not a huge number, but it's bigger than the last time I looked at it, so I'm happy. I took a moment and we talked about the first 7 years of my cooking career. And a couple days later, I was out talking to some friends and I got some great feedback, and that was cool. I've had a couple of DMs that came in where people are like, keep going, just keep going. So we're going to keep going. When last we saw our main character, his name is Simon. He was hanging out with his dad in Massachusetts. Oh, that's me. So I guess I gotta go back to first person. So here we go. I was hanging out with my dad in Massachusetts, and I got a call from a buddy, and he basically told me that in no uncertain terms, my presence was requested back in Florida. So I went. The funny thing about Florida for me and the Gulf Coast and where I was hanging out was I made some great friends, but I didn't ever feel like there was a huge restaurant community that I was a part of. And I'd experienced some of that in New Mexico. And I felt like, gosh, maybe I should do something. And then my mom gave me a little jingle somewhere around the 4th of July in 98 maybe. Yeah, it sounds about right. So I've been in Florida a little while, and she says, Simon, your grandparents are getting old. They could probably use somebody hanging around the house, and they just happen to have a renovated garage space that is a bedroom that you can live in. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, I don't think you're understanding me. And I said, I guess not. She said, you're going. Yes, ma'am. Okay, got it. She says, I'll give you about 6 months to figure it out. And then I need you to get out there and just do what you do. Cook and be present. And if you can help out, help out. And I said, well, I can't really argue with that because I know it's not going to do any good. So I figured it out and told my boss, who I'd now been working for, 2+ years. And he said, well, I can't really argue with that. Mom said. So here I go. Found myself in Santa Barbara, California. The Riviera of the West Coast. I don't know, the American Riviera, something like that, whatever. Here's what I know. Good restaurants. 90 miles north of Los Angeles, which is definitely one of the United States' premier dining cities. So it's sort of a small town feel meets a market. And I went to work for a Four Seasons because I'd done some hotel work and I wanted to be doing something on the higher end of things, and I wanted to get some great experience. And oh my goodness, this place was, it was like a pasture of cats with horses running around trying to herd them. It was craziness. We had 5 different outlets, all tied to one kitchen line. So there was, there was a breakfast, lunch, and dinner restaurant that ran 7 days a week. There was a fine dining restaurant that was obviously dinner only, and it was only like, I think it was 5 days a week, so no Sunday, Monday maybe. And then there was 24-hour room service, and there was a pool menu, and then there was like some other bar menu, and a lot of things, no, some of the things overlapped, but some of them certainly did not. And so you could be doing, you'd be grilling a 20-ounce steak for the fine dining restaurant, and getting a beautiful mushroom risotto working. And you could have, on my station, I did a whole lot of meat, so I have 6 hamburgers working at any given time, and kids' chicken nuggets. And so it just kind of ran the gamut. You'd have, really simple bar food and really simple, like, kids' food and pool food. next to, you know, really intricate dishes, and it was definitely one of those places where the intensity was up. You'd only have maybe 2 to 3 hours to set up your station, and in the middle of the day, especially in the summer, you were busy all day. There was just people, all those different menus requiring your attention. You know, the pool would be going off at 3 o'clock when you're trying to get set up. And I had this sous chef, and to say that he was a tough one was not even close to enough to say. This guy was brutal. He was a genius though, man. God, his food was good. And he would scream at me, "Simon, let's go, Simon. Come on, come on, come on." And you know, he'd be on the outside of the line, and of course it's a fancy hotel with lots of stainless steel, and when he really felt like he needed to push me, like urging me on wasn't enough, he would reach down and he would find my tongs sitting on my side of the line, and he would take them from me, and he would close them, and he would rap on the outside of the line screaming, "Come on, Simon, my 4-year-old can cook risotto faster than you. Let's go, let's go, let's go." And so I did that for about a year, and I learned a ton. My food knowledge just went through the roof. Every day was hard, every day was grueling. And you know, some of the guys working with me picked on me because I wasn't probably as fast as I should have been, but I just kept going and I just kept trying, and I got better and I got faster, and I think I got more organized. I definitely got more stressed out. But that was my introduction to really high pressure kitchens where people were screaming and yelling, and I just tried to do my best. And you know, like I say, it lasted just about a year. And then one day I was wiping down my station, and I headed kind of towards the back door where the chef's office was. And I walked in the chef's office because I could see that there was a few of the other cooks that had just finished with me on the line, and they were hanging out talking to the chef. And I hear the only other white guy in the place say to the chef, "Why on earth do you beat on Simon so much? Like, why do you pick on him? Why do you ride him like a pony?" And he says, "Well, I do it because he can take it." He goes, "That guy's tough." And just at that moment, I was walking into the office, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, "You beat me because I can take it. Well, take this. Here's 2 weeks. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll work the entire thing, and then I'll go on my merry way." And that was about that. Like, I honestly still interact with that guy. I remember him. I respected him. But I'm not really put on this earth to be somebody's whipping boy. So I didn't. Next stop, that was the San Ysidro Ranch. And this is one of those cool places. It's like, it's, you know, all luxury cottages. I met Tommy Lee Jones there. I met James Woods there. You know, JFK had his honeymoon there, like fancy high end. Did that for a while. Honestly, it was a great place to be. One more opportunity to meet amazing people and see some really, really good food. I think the highlight of that experience was they had enough money to invest in a team of gardeners to garden just for the kitchen. And so there'd be fresh lettuces when you walked in the afternoon, and you'd toss those into the stuff that you bought from your standard purveyors and the farmers markets. And, you know, in the late summer, tomatoes were just busting. And so you'd have to come up with a special for tomatoes because otherwise you're gonna lose them. And just, you know, the beets coming out of the ground were hot. All the vegetables were just amazing. And it was all done organically. And so every morning was kind of a special thing to see what they were going to pull out. And once in a while, when I had time, you know, I'd take a break, I'd go out to the garden and sort of see what was coming. And if I was lucky, I got to talk to perhaps the one of the gardeners. And They did such an amazing job of bringing us top quality produce. And so that was one of my first experiences with like having it right there. It was like, I didn't even farm to table, it was like garden to table. And we got to just, you know, sometimes it was, oh gosh, we have so many tomatoes, they're gonna go in family meal. And that was those are good days. And then, I don't know. Oh, a buddy of mine, he comes to me one day, I was sitting in a bar, and he says, hey. I said, what's up? He says, I got an opportunity for you. I'm heading off to hang out with my girlfriend in Australia. I was like, oh, okay. I said, so what does that mean? He says, well, I'm the sous chef at this little tiny restaurant, like 45 seats. He goes, and I think that you probably take my place. Okay, like I don't hate that idea, to be honest with you. You know, and so I went and I got to work with a chef who went to the CIA, and he had some pretty grand visions, and this guy he wanted to do it the way it felt good. But, you know, we went to the farmer's market twice, sometimes three times a week. And we got to talk to the farmers about what was coming and plan menus and plan specials and really keep the creative juices flowing. And that was such an experience. And I feel like they did probably 30 or 40 wines by the glass, all from the local Santa Barbara area. And, you know, it was just about creating a great dining experience. It wasn't big numbers, you know, compared to some of those other things like the Four Seasons. And I think if you counted up all the things you did in a day, you probably do 500, 600, 700 covers over the course of a shift. And San Ysidro Ranch, maybe you did 70 or 80, and this place, you do 60. If you did 100, you were working for a living, boy. And so that was good stuff. I really like felt like I was getting somewhere. And now I had a year after being there for a year, I'd been the sous chef for a year. And I got to work with, you know, one of the guys who's become one of my best friends over the last 20 years. And he'd been a cook up in San Francisco, and another guy had been a sous chef in a restaurant there in Santa Barbara as well. And so I felt like the caliber of cook that I was around had just gone up, and it was a lot of fun, and we joked and we laughed. But we tried to make really great food day in and day out. So that was a great experience. And then somewhere along the way, in that year, I met a woman who would become my girlfriend pretty quickly. And then, you know, it's just, I looked around and I was like, well, Santa Barbara is great. If you have money and you already own your own place, but, you know, trying to have an apartment, because, you know, the being with grandparents was good for a while. And I think that everything comes to an end. And so, I chose to move out of there. And then shortly after that, my girlfriend and I, who later became my wife, we decided that I would move to Los Angeles because that's where she was. And so, just when you think you've like seen a bunch of stuff and you've worked hard and you've gone from this place to that place, then I moved to LA, and holy shit, that's when things really started, the heat started to turn up. I feel like my education was only where I thought I'd already learned a bunch. Somebody turned the amp up to like 11 and we got moving. I went to work for a company called the Patina Group, and they've since become something much larger and different. They do a whole lot of large venue stuff. But back in the day, the Patina Group was a collection of probably 10 to 15 restaurants when I got there. And mind you, this was 2002. And it was largely focused around California-influenced French food. The corporate chef at the time looked at me and said, it's sun-drenched cuisine. And I said, cool. Because I liked that. I thought it made a lot of fun, a lot of sense. And so that was where, like, All right, now you're working in a busy restaurant. I just happen to be on Sunset Boulevard, in the heart of Hollywood. And if you've ever been there or never been there, let me just tell you, it's not nearly as glamorous as it sounds. The streets are dirty, but the characters are plentiful, and lots of restaurants. And I was very proud of what we did. I worked for a restaurant called Pino Hollywood, and I worked with a chef for, almost 3 years. And he was one of the most dedicated, hardworking, thorough people I've ever met. And that was how I would describe him. He was thorough. He had a plan every day, and every day he went into focused. In fact, I think a lot of what I took from him was his mantra of, and or habit of, kind of looking at me and yelling, perhaps not at the top of his lungs, but he'd yell, "Simon, focus, focus, focus. And when you're done, focus." And so, I don't know, it was a great way to learn, because we became great friends, and we pushed our cooks hard, and we were close to the Pantages Theater, and they had they had the Lion King or some other big thing that was going on. And so you'd get up maybe 100 people, 150 people who would want to sit down, and they needed to eat in an hour, and it was just go time, go, 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 go. And then they were gone. And then you kind of get like regular dinner service, and people would come and they'd sit on the patio because it's LA and it's warm and it's nice. And you'd, have a good rush of dinner. And then Fridays and Saturdays were just busy from start to finish because, and man, that was fun. But I feel like I got to a place where I wanted to continue to grow, and I don't know. I just, 2-3 years with them, and I was like, I feel like I've become a better manager, because I wasn't a very good manager, but I got better, so that was cool. But I also felt like I wanted to take on sort of the next challenge. And boy, oh boy, did I get one. I went to work for the Viceroy Hotel back when there was only two of them, and they weren't the Viceroy Hotel Group yet, but instead they were, I think it was the Core Hotel Group, and they had a few other properties that weren't branded as Viceroy. This was in Santa Monica, right across the street from the beach, and the chef was Warren Schwartz. And this guy, oh man, he taught me a world about leading people. This is a guy who'd gone to college and he'd had like a degree in communications, and he just knew how to wield his leadership to get what he needed and really inspire people to work hard and quite honestly, not to fuck around. And so, I got to see a real leader in action, and I got to see somebody who led while not just grinding themselves into the ground. Unfortunately, I feel like in the year and a half, maybe year and three quarters that I worked there, that's kind of what my primary function was to push myself into the ground. Man, the Viceroy was nuts, because you'd have a packed bar, and they had the patio out back and it was sort of the Hollywood scene. I think I saw Hugh Hefner and his entourage come in a few times, and I saw a bunch of stars and met all sorts of people. At the same time, you had a fine dining restaurant that had 3 stars in the LA Times. Mind you, this was back before Michelin stars were a thing in the United States. You still cared about what the local newspaper, you remember newspapers? You cared about what the local newspaper said. And we had 3 stars, and we were fighting to keep them, boy. We were trying to do the best possible food we could at high volume. We would do crazy things on Friday nights, like somebody would throw me the keys to the liquor closet, and I'd go and I'd grab 2-3 cases of Red Bulls, and I'd drop them in 5-gallon buckets and ice and water, and I'd let those sit in the chef's office for a couple hours. And then right when all hell was breaking loose, 8:30, 8:45 on a Friday and Saturday night, I'd go into the office and I'd grab my buckets and I'd run down the line and I'd scream, "Grab 2! Only 2, And everybody grabbed their two Red Bulls, and then I looked down and realized, oh, there's two for me, and there's two for the chef. Oh, there's still a couple left, and I'd toss them over to the cooks that I thought were going to take the worst pounding of the evening, and I'd scream, here you go. And we would just get those kids absolutely whacked on the junk, fired up and ready to go. And there was lots of yelling and lots of, yes, chef, and all those things that the Bear has become perhaps infamous for promoting. But man, we had a good time. That was a hard job. We would do parties of 100, 200 of all appetizers, all at the same, and everything came out of this small space, and everything always happened at the same time, because that's how it works. It just is, and it's just go, more. And so at some point, I kind of hit a wall. I've been there for a year, like I say, a year and two thirds. I don't know. It was early to mid 2006, and I'm pretty sure that was genuinely the first time I ever burnt out. Yeah, that was the first time I ever burnt out. And I didn't really know what was happening, but boy, my head was fuzzy on a regular basis, and I was stressed, and I was getting to a place where I was just tired all the time. And so I finally, it was painful, but I had to look at my wife, who was going, no, I don't think this is a healthy thing for you. I think that you push yourself and they push you, and at some point everybody conspires and Simon gets pushed harder. And so I let that one go, and I gave a good long notice, and then I decided that it was time for me to get out of there. And so I took a little time. My wife said, why don't you take a little bit of time to just take it easy? And so I did. And I think that was a great thing. You know, it was one of those environments where you could absorb all the stress, and you'd see massive turnover of managers. I mean, I feel like every 6 to 8 weeks I saw a new bar manager come through, and we'd done pretty good in the kitchen to keep people, and we'd done pretty good at the management level to keep the chefs and sous chefs that we had. And I'd gone from a sous chef there to the role of executive sous chef. And I brought on one of the guys I'd worked with over the years and made him our sous chef. And he did a phenomenal job of kind of helping to push things along. But at the end of the day, it just seemed like it was time. And so, you know, I said, okay, I've done good work here. The chef and I, Warren and I saw it as a time to make a break, and he respected my decision. And so I sort of closed it out. That was a good chapter. And so, here we are. I feel like we just blasted through another, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. But that was a definite chapter in LA where I pushed hard, and I learned a ton, and I feel like I grew. And all of a sudden I went from a good cook, maybe not the best cook, but a good cook, to a decent manager. And then I even feel like I grew as a leader in that time. And I really started to understand how important it was to be able to leverage the people around me that to help me achieve my goals. It wasn't just about strapping on a yoke and pulling hard. Because as I was reminded a few times by my friends and family, Simon, you are not an ox, you are a human being, and you need to behave appropriately. So, with that, I'm going to say thank you so much for joining me on this little episode of Chef Journeys. I need to remind you to like and subscribe and follow and listen to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts. I'd love for you to check out my website at www.culinarymechanic.com. If you were so inclined, it would be awesome to have you go to the store link and check out the merch that we got, because there's some Culinary Mechanic branded stuff if you've ever met me, you know. If you ever talked to me, you probably know that I dig bacon. So I created a shirt that says bacon. And you can't see it because this is an audio podcast, but I have that shirt on right now. And it's big 4-inch red letters across the chest that say bacon, because God bless America. And all sorts of other cool, fun things that would support the Culinary Mechanic cause and brand. So if you check that out, I'd really be appreciative. And until next time, I'm just going to say thanks for playing. Can't wait to see you soon. Bye.